Says Raphael. Who are you?
Okay.
Okay. All right. I call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. It is 6:03 p.m. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling 805-321-6639, and the phone line is open now. So to start off, if you would please join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Fontana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Rodman?
Present.
Commissioner Holden?
Here.
Chair Halverson?
Here.
Please let the record show that Commissioner Mann and Commissioner McLaughlin are not present.
Okay. At this time, the Planning Commission will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. The Commission should by motion adopt the agenda as presented or revised. Do we have any comments or proposed changes to the agenda?
I have none, so if you don't have any, I'll make a motion.
Please.
I move that we adopt the agenda as presented. The agenda is May 2nd, 2023.
Very good. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Very good. We need a voice vote. So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Let's move on then. So we're in the public communications section of the meeting. Please call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to provide any public comment. During this time, the Commission will allow public communication. Any member of the public may address the Commission for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this Commission. The Commission will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the Commission cannot act on items not on the agenda. So I'm going to open it to public comment. And is there anyone in the room who would like to make any statements tonight in general? Anyone on the phone lines?
No.
Very good. Then I will close public comment and open up the consent calendar. One more time, if there's any member of the public who wishes to address the Commission on the item listed under the consent agenda, please call at 805-321-6639. Oh, okay. So I need, is there any discussion on the consent agenda? Otherwise, I need a motion.
I can provide one. I move that we approve the minutes as submitted.
I second.
And we will do a voice vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No. So the consent agenda is approved as submitted. Now we move to the public hearing. And as a reminder, if you would like to call in for public comment on an item, please call in at 805-321-6639. So the item we have before us for public hearing is development application 23-14. The applicant is Pacifica Companies, and Senior Planner Castillo has a presentation for us.
Actually, it'll be myself, Megan Martin, Community Development Director. Sorry for the confusion on that in the agenda. So this evening, you'll be considering a request by Pacifica Companies for a two-year time extension to development application 10-03. This is also known as the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center. If you wouldn't mind starting the presentation. Thank you. So the proposed project includes a 150-room lodge with a conference center and restaurant that's located at the west end of West Grand Avenue within Pismo State Beach. The project includes approximately 121,370 square feet. This would be all located within approximately four buildings. Again, that includes three hotel buildings and a conference center and a hotel. Restaurant. The environmental document for the project was certified in 2012. The coastal development permit and use permit was subsequently approved in April of 2014. Being that the project is within the coastal appeal area of the coastal zone, the project was appealed to the California Coastal Commission. However, the Coastal Commission found no substantial issue with the project, and council's approval was later ratified. Following approval, Pacifica companies filed time extensions in 2016, 17, 18, 19, and 2021. As a couple of you are aware, this project's been underway for quite some time. The project's been subject to numerous regulations and compliance requirements from multiple agencies and governmental bodies. That includes the California Coastal Commission, California State Parks, as well as our city. These agencies play a crucial role in ensuring the project meets all the necessary safety, environmental, and zoning regulations of each of the different governmental bodies. This really adds to the complexity of the project, and then you couple that with just large hotel project, where any number of hurdles can significantly impact a project timeline and really push a project beyond the initially estimated timeline. So what you may have noticed is that each of these extensions has typically been 1 year, which is what our development code allows. However, during the city's recent development code update, if a permit requires the issuance by a federal or state government, per the section that's listed on your screen above you, that's 6.30.060B, an applicant may request and be granted an extension beyond the three additional 12-month periods that our development code previously allowed, and does still allow for other projects. But this is to account for the complexity and oftentimes hurdles that applicants may face when needing to obtain all the necessary permits from multiple governmental bodies. So as such, the applicant submitted a request for a 2-year time extension prior to the CDP's expiration for that time extension. Per the city's development code, the applicant must demonstrate delays were beyond their control. And this justification is provided as part of your agenda packet item. It cites delays caused previously by COVID-19, as well as more recently, they were required by the state fire marshal to resubmit their project plans. They needed to update their design, their engineering, and their permitting process functions of their building plans to meet the current building code requirements. So it was a major overhaul on Pacifica Company's behalf, as well as their contracted consultants, to modify these plans to meet the current building code standards. So these plans have been resubmitted. So both the state fire marshal, as well as state fire marshal, the city of Grover Beach, as well as state parks, we are currently reviewing those project plans. And Pacifica Companies is asking your commission for a recommendation to council to provide additional time to finalize those construction documents based on the delays which were beyond their control. And as such, staff recommends that your commission recommend to the council approval of a 2-year time extension for development application 2314.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Does the commission have any questions for staff?
I do.
Go right ahead, sir.
Staff, just as a way of understanding how long this project has been delayed, the commission is, there wasn't any member of the commission that was here in 2012, right? That's the first approval for this project?
The environmental document was certified in 2012. Its original development permit approval was in 2014.
Okay. So I'm the longest serving member of the commission, and we weren't here then. Were there any staff members on staff that were here then?
The most recent staff member has since retired. That would be former community development director, Buckingham.
So this project is so old that the staff is all new since it was first approved, and so is the commission.
Correct. However, our public record is maintained, and we have all of our documentation as well as our environmental documents that help to inform us of the decisions that were made and the policy interpretations that came out of that approval.
Okay. Wow. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That notwithstanding, I guess the project, you know, it's pretty understandable why it's been delayed as long as it has. And, you know, too many government organizations get involved. It's bound to stall things. Any other questions for staff?
We have
none. Okay. Then I'm going to open it up to public comment and ask if anyone wants to speak to this issue from the audience here. Seeing no one, I'll ask Ms. Ratana if she has anyone on the phone lines. Very good.
Is the applicant here?
I don't know that. I would have to say no.
No, not for the level of the project in front of us. If it was something under consideration for a modification to the CDP or something of a higher level of discretion, they likely would have been in attendance, but not for a time extension.
Okay.
Okay. Then I will close public comment, bring it back to the commission. Is there any discussion about granting the extension?
Yes, I kind of do. Since the applicant isn't here, has staff communicated lately with the applicant directly?
Yes, their representatives.
Have they given any? I know you said there's some documents showing that they're making progress. Have they given an indication of when they're going to actually break ground on this project?
So
none of the documents actually say a date that they're...
Yeah, so what they're hoping for, because again, they had to resubmit their plan. So what they're hoping for is that they'll receive permit issuance from the state in January of next year, and they're hoping to break ground by summer of that same year. So next summer, it's really always your best estimated guess when it comes to when you might be able to break ground. But as of right now, they are in direct communication with myself as well as our team. And they're also actively working with and coordinating with our state parks representatives or project managers, as well as as well as with our Coastal Commission staff. So they're currently making good faith efforts to move forward on the permit. And we have every understanding based on their reasoning listed in the attachment that they're going to be able to move forward within the next year.
Did I hear you say that it'll be a year before the state gives them their final approval?
January of 2024 is what we're hoping. So we're all hoping that based on their review that we'll be able to have permit issuance by next year. So they just resubmitted their plans. Typically, right. Plan review at a local level will oftentimes take 2 to 3 rounds before you're able to move forward with stamped plans. And the state, as well as the additional governmental agencies, just adds to that layer of complexity. So we're kind of giving ourselves a little bit of buffer to provide for those additional months.
Right. I was going to suggest maybe we consider a 1-year extension, but if the state's going to take that long to approve it, then 1 year obviously wouldn't be enough. So, okay. That's all the questions I have, I guess.
Anything else? Then I will entertain a motion.
Well, I move that we approve development or the 2-year extension for development application
1003, yes, that's the application. This is development application 2314.
And final environmental impact report.
I believe okay. It's a recommendation to the council for approval.
Right. Correct. Oh, right, that we recommend the council approve.
Very good, thank you for that clarification. Do I have a second?
Yes, I'll second it.
Very good, can I have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodman?
Yes.
And Chairperson Halverson?
Yes. Very good. Motion passes. So we will move on to item number 5 on the agenda, which is the West Grand Avenue pre-application development application 22-07. The applicant is Central Coast Builders. And I hesitate to say Senior Planner Castillo will give us a presentation. Yes?
You're on the money on that one.
Okay. Megan, let you do one. Okay.
All right. Well, good evening, commissioners. Before you is a pre-application, so it's a little bit different than what we normally do from entitlement and approval. We'll walk through that for you. But this is development application 2207. 401 West Grand Avenue is the pre-application. So as many of you, as you know, we recently, you as a commission, approved 402 West Grand Avenue, which is on the southeast side of the intersection of 4th and Grand. This is actually on the northeast side, so just very opposite of that. So you can see the pictures there on the screen. For those of you at home or who will be watching this later, what's currently on this intersection is the used car lots, the formerly known as JJ Market bar / liquor store, and then a vacant car lot as well as a vacant lot itself. So this intersection, in preparation for this meeting, as well as in talking with the project applicant and their consultants, these lots have actually seen a lot of stuff over the last year, over the many years. This includes a gas station used to formerly be at the corner, a service station used to be there where the used car lot is. Believe it or not, a barbecue pit and restaurant was also there. Yeah, see, there you go. At JJ's Market, wasn't just a market. At one time, it was actually a liquor store. It was a bar and other sort of inceptions. But very similar to 401 and 404, or very similar to 402, this is a key intersection and a key node for the city of Gower Beach. And by key, meaning it's a key welcoming site for those folks who come visit the dunes or come to the coast visiting for the first time, as well as a main focal point for our residents and those who pass through on a daily basis is the intersection of 4th and Grand. It is one of the only intersections that, at least from 4th Street's perspective, goes to US 101. So there are some key site policies that are a part of this. And again, you recently approved a very similar structures at the southeast corner of 4th and Grand, and that's 402 West Grand Avenue. I know you just heard the lodge, you know, timetable, which is very elongated. To give you an example, when we don't have a state agency, where construction should be beginning by midsummer on that one. So very truncated timetable. But the total project area is approximately 2.5 gross acres. It's 1.3 net. It is zoned visitor serving. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And again, I went over what's there and existing. Some of the key policies that both our land use element and the West Grand Avenue master plan have is that it should have a primary entrance at the corner of West Grand Avenue and 4th Street. Parking lots should be located in the rear to give prominence to the building or buildings that would be on the site. Design and scale should draw pedestrians. And then there are a mix of uses, including ground floor commercial with residential above. This was taken out of our West Grand Avenue master plan, which was approved and adopted back in 2010. So as you can see, those plans and visions do take time to finally come to fruition, and we are now at that cusp of the fruition. So these are key policies that you want to keep in mind as we go through the pre-application process. So there are existing, you know, considerations with the general plan and West Grand Avenue Master Plan, and again, as I mentioned, there are guiding land use elements and policies that includes preference for mixed-use development, street character, and then another preference for mixed-use development on 6.6, but again, what is that mix of commercial uses? And then there's the West Grand Avenue Master Plan, which identifies the site as an opportunity site, and again, should be developed into a gateway with pedestrian orientation. So I'm going to actually turn it over to our applicant at this juncture, who will go over what they're proposing. And then Scott Martin from RM will then turn it back to me to just summarize a couple key points that we had in our staff report. And again, this is varying from what we typically do. So I'm going to turn it over to Scott from RM, who will go over what the sort of the meat and potatoes of the proposed project.
Thank you, staff, commissioners. Pleasure to be in front of you tonight. I think this is Raf's way of getting me to talk less, to be honest. We'll see how that goes. Just want to first say thank you for this opportunity. The process worked well. This is the same applicant team and representatives of 402 Grand across the street. We rather enjoyed working with your city, with your staff, and with you, and we want to try it again. So we are back with somewhat of a sister development, I like to say, the bookends, if you will. So I'll walk you a little bit through what we've come up with so far, but our main intent tonight is really to hear from you. So we are at the starting stage. There is nothing formally submitted for entitlements yet. There are some performas and some other financial considerations that the applicant, Central Coast Builders, has to take in mind. But as far as a design, as far as a unit mix, as far, we're excited about what we're showing you tonight, but looking to hear back from you. So with that, I'm going to cruise through a couple slides. A brief agenda is just to talk about the site, how we conform with the West Grand Avenue plan, as Raphael was talking about, what our site plan does itself, what are we doing, where are we getting inspiration from, what this building ultimately currently kind of conceptually looks like, why our unit mix is what it is, and then I think I'm going to hand it back to staff and we're happy to answer any questions. There is some contextual sensitivity across the street, across Grand on the south. You can see where 402 is. We did learn a lot going through that process about some neighborhood sensitivity, about some street presence, addressing the street, about parking still being needed but wanting to be screened. It's been a great lessons learned from 402. On 401, we have two corners. We have a full block of frontage, and that's a very different type of project in this case. It allows for a little bit more flexibility. It really elongates that pedestrian experience, seeing that Grand is that main focus. So I think you'll see a little more transparency, the idea that not only can you engage with retail and plazas, but you can actually penetrate into the project as well. You'll see that sort of connectivity through our concepts, but we still want to be sensitive to existing neighbors. So as Grand is the primary focus for vehicles traveling through town, there is a residential sensitivity to the north. There's very limited windows. I just verified once again today, there's only a couple like what look like bathroom windows to the properties to the north. So we're not super worried about privacy concerns or view sheds, people looking onto each other. There's also no private yards or very few. But there is sort of a transitional opportunity here to go from what is your commercial thoroughfare to your residential established neighborhood. And we'll talk about how we tried to achieve that before. I don't know who did this, but somebody already designed this. It makes it easy. So we're looking at the bubbles here of D and E in the West Grand Avenue master plan. This was, it gave us the starting ground. It really did talk a lot about how to create emphasis on the corner, where the appropriate spacing for retail and entries, plazas, those sorts of things. So well done to your staff and your previous consultants who have sort of set the stage and laid a clear path for what development should look like moving forward. At this sort of rough stage, this is our site concept. I've labeled them building one and building two because one big, huge building got a little, well, huge. And it just felt like a little too much all along Grand Avenue. So really trying to play up not one corner now, but both corners, both on the corner of Grand and 4th and Grand and 5th, with some negative space, with some outdoor space, plaza potential, outdoor dining, those sorts of features. The back of the site, which happens to be the north, is where we wanted to put our parking. So it's tucked behind the buildings, not seen. There is an access point right about in the middle of the site. That's a number of less curb cuts than are currently out there, but it gives viability to the commercial. If you haven't read a newspaper lately, which most of us don't anymore, commercial is really, really struggling throughout the world. Amazon and everything else has changed the idea of shopping, but those experiential things like restaurants and cafes, coffee shops are still doing pretty well, but they need accessibility, they need visibility, they like what's called a hard corner. So by creating an access point internal to the site, We've maintained that there can still be multiple corners to the retail portion of the buildings, and we hope that's really going to help find great tenants to lease. There are no current tenants yet at this point. This is a build on spec and show it around to try to get the right tenants. There's some possibilities, but nobody yet. So what you see in brown is a couple residential garages. This is some of what we heard actually from you and council on 402, is that maybe some private parking would open up to some potential different diversity of residential users. So it's something that we didn't have the space for to provide for on 402, but we did want to provide some. There is not a garage per every unit by any means, but there is the ability, we call it decoupled, to have a garage, and then if that's what you want, you could lease those out or own one of those. So we did provide a handful of garages, and you can see the parking lot, which would be a shared parking lot, a mixed-use parking lot, providing spaces for both residential and the commercial uses as well. In yellow, you'll see kind of a lobby here for the residential. We are also looking for a little bit of community space for the residential, maybe some storage and HOA. We're kind of playing with the ground floor now. We know that the importance is to have transparency and public engagement along the frontage of Grand Avenue. But after you kind of get into that, we've explored a number of different sort of ground floor plans. We are proposing ground floor units just on the 4th Street side. So it would kind of continue that residential pattern and neighboring that you already have. They would have separate entries, private little stoops. That goes back to your objective design standards and falls in line with what we believe that the city desires are. As far as design inspiration, I saw my rendering for Grover Beach Lodge. I've had the pleasure of working in this area for quite some time. It is a spectacular influence. The ocean, the dunes, the harshness that can come along with that, the need for durability, the attraction that is there. There's a real sort of, I want to call it a sort of simple palette that I really like. There's some natural tones and colors that we think are prevalent in your city, and we're trying to pull from that. There's a couple great examples that, you know, I really struggle with. I don't want to be Santa Barbara, and I want to be something of place, something appropriate. So we are going a little bit more contemporary in the styling. There is a couple examples of sort of what the building architecture currently we're thinking of. There's some wood tones. There's a variety of mix of materials. We've talked to staff about maybe introducing a little less stucco and a little bit more alternative materials like either a board and batten siding or horizontal lap siding. We're definitely inspired, we think, by the coastal theme. The idea of these modern forms rooted in sort of a contextual vernacular, so built from what is there now, but interpreted in a modern way. We are below your allowable height limit. We are exceeding your required setbacks. There are no exceptions on this project. We want to make sure that we stay within that. We think your city's done a fabulous job of sort of laying out a path to move forward quite well. So we're looking for some overlapping forms. We want there to be some variety. On the bottom, you can see the large transparency for the retail spaces, that frontage that we find really important, and the residential clearly defined up above that. So on the Grand Avenue side, you see what appears to be a three-story building. That's really because the retail space, if you walk into a Starbucks or something, they're very tall. They're 20 feet plus tall. So the frontage of Grand is actually a two-story volume. On the 4th Street side, you can see how we can get two layers of residential in that same side. So it's a three-story or a four-story building, depending on which side you're looking at. Here shows some of the materials and colors that we've been talking about, and again, we're still at a conceptual stage, but we really do like that sort of beach-inspired tone. The idea of driftwood that you see, you know, even in here, those sort, you know, the a little bit, we talk about this in the office, we almost wanted that rolling wave to kind of take play through the actual building design itself without being too literal. So I told the guys they couldn't draw curves. But anyways, that's sort of the architectural styling. You'll see the plans. Previously on 402, we were really focused on smaller units. We felt like that was a target. And what we heard throughout that process was, I think that is a target, but that doesn't mean it has to be the only target. Oops, sorry, clicked a little fast there. So in this version, there's about 60 units. And again, that's two sort of separated buildings. There's still about half of those that are very small units, young working professionals we see. But there's another, there's a series of one bedrooms, two bedrooms, and even a handful of three bedrooms. We tried to provide a little bit more mix. We're not sure that's perfect. We think there's a market for it. It's not for everybody, so it's definitely not all three bedroom units, but we did think there could be a market for a couple of them. And that diversity of unit types is something we heard actually coming through you guys last time. So we're excited to provide a little bit more of that. We don't have a landscape concept yet, so I wanted to echo back to what was done on 402. We are looking at some sort of residential roof deck, an opportunity to meet your neighbor, have some sort of outdoor either barbecue facility or a place to sit and watch the sunset, those sorts of things. Every unit will have its own private deck, but we do believe having a little bit more of a community deck where everybody in the building can get together and share a dinner. You bring the spaghetti and I'll bring the wine, and have a place to mingle, we thought was very important. So building on that, we haven't yet got to that level of design yet. Again, I just wanted to touch upon, there is a mix of units now, not just studios in this version, but a couple others as well. Some one bedrooms, some two bedrooms. We finding in the market, there's some young professionals where two guys own, two guys are working at a job and they actually want to live together and just, haven't gone out and started the family and those sorts of things yet. And then there is even a three bedroom option, but there's only a handful of them. That was where I was supposed to say questions and hand it back to staff. So we'll be around for questions after it.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. See, we're learning here on the fly here. So as Scott had mentioned, and as outlined in your staff report, there are a few considerations that we as staff has identified as a part of this pre-application review process. And again, I want to stress that it's a conceptual plan at this point. Nothing formal has been submitted. So these were items that we've outlined to the applicant, and as well as want to notify the commission. So first off is privacy and view sheds considerations. So prior to July of 2022, our development code and land use element had sections contained policies to determine if a proposed project could be substantially obstruct existing view sheds. Our State Housing Accountability Act, which was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, amended those that basically really prevented city staff and commission, as well as councils, to deny housing projects with subjective policies and standards. So that has really eliminated that subjectivity, at least from a legislative standpoint, but we couldn't quite wrap our heads around how do we do that and implement that as a city. So recently, our development code, which was overhauled in July of 2022, that adoption included a robust set of objective design standards, or ODS, as we like to call that, eliminating this idea of subjectivity. And by subjectivity, what you describe as a view shed may be different from what I describe as a view shed. So instead, we have these metric numbers that we can calculate. So this helps city staff to quantify, and hopefully these standards are in place to assist in alleviating potential conflicts. So with that being said, the conceptual project will need to demonstrate standards that the privacy provisions within the objective design standards are met. Scott did mention of that it is unique in that the back end of the property, when I went out and did my own site walk on there aren't many windows that are looking in the back, believe it or not. There's actually a fourplex, two units with no windows in the rear, which I thought was odd, but sure. It is an older building. But again, it is up to the applicant to provide those sections of the existing neighboring buildings along with the proposed buildings to ensure that privacy considerations are met. And there are various menu type of remedies to ensure those privacy considerations are met. Secondly, we have Development Code Section 2.3050D, which is landscaping. It shows a requirement for dense landscaping at the minimum 5 feet property line. You see that in the conceptual plans, but a formal landscape plan will need to be provided. And those basically, we take a look at the plant species to make sure they do grow at a faster rate, or conversely, they grow at a certain height to sort of provide that privacy screening. And then there's a second issue. It's known as setback interception is met, and I apologize that it's falling off the screen, and that's sort of a step back off the property line. Again, because it's conceptual, we can't analyze that, but it is something we are looking at that is in the objective design standards, and the idea is that the closer you get to the property line, you step back those second, third, and potentially fourth stories. And again, that's to alleviate those privacy concerns of having a three-story building against a one-story building and looking down on them. So again, these are items that need to be looked at as a part of any formal application that comes through. We wanted to touch on this idea of fractional density once again. This is something that city staff, along with our consultant, during the adoption of the new development code that we brought forth, and the city did adopt fractional density for all medium and high density zones throughout the city. So that's your R2, R3, CR2, CR3 lots, etc., as well as our mixed use zones, such as in this instance, visitor serving or coastal visitor serving. And so this encourages the development of smaller units through what we call an affordable by design approach. So the conceptual plan that is before you this evening does include the following fractional density breakdown. That's 22 studio units. They're 595 square feet. So that gets halved into a half a unit. So for density purposes, we only consider it 11 units. And then it begins a sort of a sliding scale until once you hit over 1,000 square feet, then a unit becomes a unit. So here, from a density standpoint, for density calculations, the conceptual project is 40 units to the acre, which is just under the 41 units maximum that is allowed per our development code. And again, in the VS zone, it's 20 units to the acre. So the applicant has sort of maximized the density within this development by utilizing the fractional density avenue. So what are the next steps for this project? Well, first off, we're going to turn it to you, the commissioners, to ask questions of city staff as well as the developer. Second is you will hopefully open up to public hearing to hear comments from not only those who are in the audience, but also on the phone as well. After that, you were to give sort of direction and comments. So we did have a couple items in terms of the landscaping item, and then also just a question of whether this meets the land use element policies, as well as the land use element policies, just sort of the general guide and directions that you will give to us as city staff. We will pass it on to the developer, who is here tonight, to listen to those as well. The applicant will then take what you've said and take what our public comments are. We've already produced what we call a letter, and this letter is sort of a what I call a roadmap as a part of this pre-application process that really outlines everything that we've seen in the development code that the applicant may or may not have addressed, as well as other sort of additional studies that need to get completed as a part of any project. As you may know, I always say, hey, California Environmental Quality Act, that's every project has to do that. This project has to do that as well. So it needs to do those studies. We've identified what those studies are. That includes a traffic analysis and a couple other analyses that need to be provided to us. The applicant will complete those analyses as well as the preliminary plans for submittal. We then will take that as a formal review. We review it like we normally do. That's a 30-day review for us. If there are any issues that are outlining, then they'll have to address those issues. That roadmap that I just spoke about, that included not only comments from myself and Ms. Martin, but also it included comments from both our Public Works Department as well as our Five Cities Fire Authority. So we really like to make this a one-stop shop to really give the applicant basically homework to come back with corrections to us so that it comes back to you as a commissioner in a much more expedient process. So again, once that review is done and we deem that complete, it returns to you, the commission, for public hearings and either approval or denial or send back for more information. So with that, I'll open up to commissioner questions of both ourselves and the developer. I would like to first start with city staff, and then if you can, then we'll open up to the developer and then move on to public comment.
All right. It seems to make more sense to me to hold off the developer until we get to public comments, and we'll bring him back in at that point. So do we have any comments to or questions to city staff?
Just one at this point. I, too, would like to hear from the public before we get in.
Well, this is just questions for staff.
But just for staff, maybe two things. This is the first pre-application I recall seeing. And is that because this is such a large project? Or because I like the idea of being involved early on rather than seeing some of the work you guys do on your own without us. So, yeah, is this something new that's going to continue, I hope, or...
So I'll touch on a little bit, and then I'll hand it off to the Community Development Director, Ms. Martin. But previously for 402 West Granville Avenue, the City Council was the pre-application spot. And the reason being is because previous to them, that the City Council was the approving body for developments that were that included a subdivision map or a condo map of greater than 5 lots. That no longer is in existence. Now, the Planning Commission is the not necessarily the final say, but the approving body rather than a recommending body. So that is why it's before you this evening. And I will turn to Ms. Martin to further elaborate why we're bringing these projects to you now.
Thank you. Just to echo that, but also to just mention that, you know, we look at West Grand Avenue as kind of being what is going to draw a lot of the economic development of this community. And when we have prominent corners such as this moving forward with applications that we're excited to see that are going to really bring life to our streets, and it's what we've envisioned as a part of our master plan, we just want to make sure that we provide for as much public input at each step of the process as possible. And this provides that public avenue to be able to do so.
Agreed. You know, I think the applicant said that this, to me, that intersection is like a gateway. And to have Mongols on one corner, a car lot on the other corner, wasn't much of a gateway. And then a vacant lot across the street. But with these two 401 and 402 additions, it looks like it's going to be quite a nice gateway. And that's appreciated. I have one more. I'm not sure I understand the view shed. I understand in residential areas, the second floor is 80% of the bottom floor. But this is a four-story building, and I'm not sure I have a grip on what are you doing. There doesn't appear to be, in what we saw from the applicant, as any kind of a second floor 80% of the first or anything like that. And then along with that, the setback is 5 foot, not from the sidewalk, but from what? From the neighbors behind or what?
So it's a two-part question, and I'll be happy to answer the two parts. Right. So the 80% rule only applies to single-family residences, and as well as what we now consider detached multi-unit dwellings, or PUDs is what we used to call them. Gives you the four-lot subdivision PUDs.
Oh, I see. Yes.
And it does also apply to ADUs as well. Right. But that's the 80% rule. Once it becomes attached, in this instance, we have condos that are share common walls, is probably the best way of putting it. The 80% rule goes out the door. And again, and the reason being is twofold. One, it's a density issue. How do we meet the density thresholds that are required of us by the state of California? As well, because that's why we updated a lot of these rules, not just to eliminate subjectivity, but also to meet our housing element goals and our RENA numbers, our regional housing needs assessment goal numbers that were set by the state and the region. And the way to do that is to maximize densities. Well, how do you do that? Well, in attached products, you got to go up. And the more you shrink down, the more less likely you're going to meet those density numbers. So the Objective Design Standards then has various techniques. The step-down technique I alluded to earlier, that's one way to sort of mask that density along the property lines. Now, your next question revolves around property lines. The setback on this project, actually, because it's visitor serving, the development code requires no setback. It's a zero setback to the sidewalk. So again, that's another way of maximizing our density. We are so used to having a 20-foot setback so we can have large parking in the front or landscaping in the front. That doesn't maximize density. It's more space. Cool. We are well past that era, and as envisioned by the council and the commission. So we are dialing back and allowing more flexibility for more creativity for property owners with their property.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's very complete answer and report. Appreciate that. So I'd hold the rest of my questions to after a hear from the public.
Any questions from you? Since he brought up these details, I guess I have one detailed question that occurred to me. Using the gross square footage, gross acreage, to determine the number of units that you can put on a lot, it seems weird to me. And let me tell you why. Because you're including the distance, halfway out to the street, halfway to the center line of the street. So, in effect, what you're saying is that the number of units I can put on a given development depends on the width of the street around it, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. It should be based on the size of the lot that you're going to build on. Can you explain why that is used, the gross?
So the gross and net predates myself and Ms. Martin.
I figured it was an ancient term, an ancient usage. But
This varies by jurisdiction, and that's the reality of it. In the development code, the revised development code of July, we rectified that because we actually, believe it or not, the R1 zones allowed you to go gross, and the R2, R3s allowed you to just go net, which effectively provides another gate and another ceiling that you do to avoid maximizing your densities. Right. And I'll go back to this again and again and again. We are in a new era. Every time you read in the papers, in the media, we are in a housing shortage. And the more density roadblocks we put up, the harder it's going to make on property owners and developers to help maximize that density and make these projects pencil. These are very expensive projects. Do not get me wrong.
I understand. And I don't have any objection to the densities that we're ending up with. It just seems to me that if we built this one block down between 6th and 7th, we wouldn't be able to have as many units on the same size net lot because the streets are narrower.
And this is
that doesn't make sense to me.
Some streets are narrower, some streets are wider. And again, it ultimately becomes, in my professional opinion, semantics, because we can go by and say, okay, let's just do net. Oh, but by the way, rather than 20 units to the acre, we're going to do 25 units to the acre.
Well, exactly. That's the way
it becomes a mental game almost because...
Well, except that we have picked the gross, and now we have to live with the gross, which is based partially on a metric that doesn't make sense, the street width. So to me, you should change that multiplier number and use the net. Anyway, I was just curious about where this came about
and
why we were still using it. But all right, I'll let it go. Is there anything else before we move on?
That's something that couldn't be changed or couldn't be made more legitimate.
It could be. It would need to be. It's something that your commission could recommend to council, but council would ultimately have to push for that change. And I just kind of wanted to add on to what Senior Planner Castillo mentioned. Gross acreage versus net acreage really provides for more comprehensive planning, which he mentioned, but it allows us to identify site constraints just as much as the opportunities as to what can actually be built on the site.
Right.
So there is a benefit to using gross acreage to being able to identify what areas are not buildable, what areas are, and then subtract that to be able to maximize that density and really understand the overall impact on the site. That's why it's typically been used as such in the past versus net. Net, you're taking it out sooner than accounting for what that impact might be. gross allows you to account for it and apply it irrespective of that change.
I hear you, but I don't get it.
Well, and it's kind of interesting to me that if you were to say, okay, we want to do what the state says and allow for more density by making smaller streets, that would make the matter worse. Well, you would have little tiny streets, well, big huge buildings, no. but you'd meet, it'd be easier to meet the density, and that'd be crazy.
Well, that's not the point. Yeah, the point is what it's the density is based on how many units do you want to cram into a given spot,
right?
And should that be determined by the street, which you're not using to build in units,
or
should that be determined by just the lot size? That's what's in my head.
And I think what Senior Planner Castillo said and summed up really well is that it really provides that ceiling of what that maximum density can be, and then overall provides us, you know, our professional expertise to say what is that full impact of the entirety of the site, both on site as well as off site for public infrastructure, et cetera, while allowing the developers to maximize that density.
So that was the only rationale I could come up with in my own mind, is that perhaps you want to take into account the impact of traffic on the street,
mm-hmm.
that you don't want to cram too many units into a space because it would be hard to get cars in and out and what have you. I guess that could be a factor.
Correct, absolutely.
That you could factor into this whole thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
He should have said that.
Well, I did at the end.
to me, another, speaking of factors, if Grover Beach has one thing that really stands out since I've lived here, it's the wider streets. And if you can't see from your house the ocean, just go out to the middle of a street near the top of a hill, and you can see the ocean. So to see if that street got narrower to allow for more density, that would lose that advantage of having Grover Beach
actually,
with nice
right streets. Around, if the streets were wider, you could have more density. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make sense.
Let's move on to public.
Yeah, let's go on.
Let's move on to public comment, and I will invite the applicant up to answer whatever questions we might have.
Did we? We're going to hear from the public.
This is the public. We're starting with the applicant.
Oh, okay.
My name's Cam Boyd. I'm with Coastal Community Builders. I'm the applicant.
All right. Thanks for being here.
Good. Glad you're here.
So, Mr. Rodman, you have comments, questions?
Well, I kind of wanted to hear if the public has.
Well,
anything.
We usually start to the
Can
applicant
Can we call
first?
You guys back when?
Sure.
I don't plan on going anywhere.
Okay. I'm not sure there's a lot of comment, but yeah, I'd like to hear from the public for.
Okay, so you don't have any questions for the applicant at this point?
No.
Okay, sorry, I thought you did. Yeah?
No.
Okay, well, do I have any questions for you? No, I actually don't, so I guess you're excused for the moment. So I at this point, I'll allow the public to get up and speak. Is there anyone who would like to speak to this issue? If you could identify yourself and let us know what you'd like to know.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Krista Jeffries, and I live on Ramona Avenue between 11th and 12th. And I walk by this lot multiple times a week and was really excited to see that there was interest in developing it. I think it's a real eyesore at this point, and it's a, as the senior planner alluded to, it harkens back to a previous era of lots of car-based infrastructure and a liquor store and all of that. But hearing the application, the pre-app from the applicant, I think the presenter said that they were trying to be respectful, conservative. I can't remember the term he used, but he alluded to the fact that they're not going as big as they could, they're not going as tall as they could, and that's very sweet of him, but I would like him to not do that. I think this is very expensive land, this is a very expensive project, and if there's any time to be inventive and bold and see something big and game-changing, it would be during the housing shortage that we have right now. I think using the land to its maximum capability would be better than being conservative or playing it safe. This is a kind of project that's going to be there for a long time, and I think maximizing the use would be better than playing it safe, keeping it shorter, having more parking, those kinds of things. I am interested in what the ideas, if there are any, around pet relief areas. I know there's a lot of, there's been talk about that issue at this commission before with previous projects. So I'm just curious. I personally wouldn't say yes or no to it based on the availability of pet relief areas. But yeah, I think that was about it. Overall, it looks great. And looking forward to when it breaks ground.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this issue? Do we have anyone on the phone lines who would like to speak to this issue? Okay, then.
That's too bad.
So does the commission have any other questions of the applicant that we would like to bring back?
Yeah, I kind of have, well, some input.
Well, we'll do that.
And questions.
Is this well, do your questions, that? And then we'll do input.
Okay. No, I have no direct questions
okay.
right now.
Very good. Then I will close public comment, bring it back to the commission, and we can discuss your thoughts. You'd like to start?
Would you?
We're just at this point. I guess you know this is just a recommendation. They're trying to get
right.
our ideas
yeah,
and
I'd
suggestions.
Like to see more of a discussion and
okay.
Yeah.
So,
do you want to go first? I've been like hogging the show here, I feel.
I don't I have no idea what to ask or what to offer.
Okay. I do.
We kind of thought you would.
Yeah.
I kind of organize this into what I see that I really like in the applicant's beginning plan, and what I'd like to see kind of maybe improved, if possible. The idea of having two buildings there with access between them, and then the patio, I really think that breaks up the I don't know what to call it other than the blockishness of a building. I know we need to create housing. I know we need to meet our requirements from the state, but I don't want to see density at the expense of beauty in a sense. And to break up that big building that could have been there with two buildings, I think is the right way to go. I really appreciate that. I'd like to see the patio on the other side. I know it might use up some parking places that are needed, but there are three patios as I saw the plan, and to add another patio opposite in between the two buildings. And then I'm not sure I like the idea of no setback on the Grand Avenue side. I like the idea of landscaping there and even more landscaping, but if there could be some way of having a wider walkway or some kind of a setback on the Grand Avenue frontage, those patios are going to help a lot there. I really support. And as patios go, we see a lot of roof patios. And I guess this could have been a question, but I'm curious as to why there isn't a planned roof patio. But I appreciate the applicant's appreciation for balconies that allow for barbecues and even larger areas for gathering of community barbecues within the project. All of that is very positive. The debate on smaller units versus larger units, I think I'm in the minority, and I appreciate the public's comments that we need housing probably more than anything. But gosh, if it's marketable to have really attractive little homes in a big building like that would be very attractive to me. And so I do support the outdoor community areas very much. And then kind of on what may be even better if it could be done is to cut down on the blockage. I like the building number one, the one on the corner, on Grand Avenue and 4th, a lot better than I like the looks of the building on Grand Avenue and the other, kind of the other corner. There's just something about that building, the number one, that the relief of it, it just breaks up the design of the blockage one, and the second building locks that personality. So some of those elements in the first building could be implemented into the second building. That would be cutting up, which has got to be the blockishness of the building in my mind. You got to have that. You got to have the density. You got to have the apartments, and you got to have the parking. So if there could be a setback, I see the sidewalk being right there along Grand, and then a big building. It's going to help with the windows, with all that bottom floor being open. That's a good idea, but it's just if there's some way to open up that sidewalk, the patios are a good idea. Maybe more little areas that could open up the sidewalk. I think that covers all the points that I have.
Okay, thank you. So to talk about patios again, I think the three patios you're referring to are the ones in front that are, I think they're intended to be outdoor dining areas for mm-hmm. the commercial areas, okay?
Right. So there's two, one is on the
corner.
The break between the buildings,
right,
and the other two
front.
Are on the
corner. Grand side, yeah.
So if there could be a third one across from the one between the buildings, that would be ideal.
Third one.
Okay. I mean a fourth one. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
A fourth one across.
Oh, you're talking about on both sides
of both
the
sides of
driveway
that
comes
driveway.
In from Grand.
Yeah, and that open up the driveway too.
Well, close off the driveway. But anyway, unless you made the building smaller.
Yeah, make the building smaller.
Anyway, so I just wanted to clarify that you knew that those three were not intended for the tenant use.
No, well, not necessarily. Also the tenant and the public, yeah.
Well, if right. they're going to eat there, yeah.
Yeah.
So the rooftop patio thing, I to reiterate what Commissioner Rodman said, I agree that those are desirable for tenants, and I think maybe one on each of the two buildings would be great, because I'm sure the buildings will segregate themselves pretty quickly, and the building that has one will say that's ours and whatever. Anyway, so I think it's a good idea to put one on each one, and they're really a good draw, I think, for tenants because of our views and all that sort of thing. So that's good. I had questions about the garages, but you answered both of them about why this was different from across the street and how many there were going to be allocated. And I think it's a good idea to provide them. And I think that in the interest of space, that you didn't need to provide one for every unit, maybe not even needed by every unit. So I think that was a good idea. The range of the unit sizes from very small to even the three bedrooms, I think, is great. You've accommodated a lot of what people are looking for, I think, in rentals. The only thing, and I'm sure this will come out in the wash when you do traffic studies and that sort of thing, is the access. To get into the lot, to get into the parking behind, if you're coming up and down 4th or up and down Grand, the only way in is off of Grand, really. You have to go around the block. So that means of the four different traffic streams that might be wanting to get in there, only one would be accommodated by making a simple right turn into the lot. And I'm sure there's ways around that, doing something on 4th. I'm not even sure there's ways around that. The way you've got it laid out seems to be one of the few ways it works if you're going to preserve the building length along 4th Street. You're kind of stuck in a hard place there unless you eliminate some units. But how to get those people onto 5th Street without impacting Ramona, the street above, or 4th Street itself. There's no signal right now on 5th Street, I should say. There's no signal on 5th Street, so people trying to get in that would be going east on Grand. Either they're going to back up trying to turn left, or they're going to go down to the next block. Anyway, I'm sure it'll come out in the wash in the traffic studies, but it's a concern. In fact, we had a member of the public who voiced her concern. She lives on Ramona there, I guess, and they have a lot of traffic now, I guess, people cutting across rather than going through the intersection at Grand and 4th. They cut around and go over Ramona and come up that way. So she's concerned that it's going to make her traffic on her relatively quiet street much worse. So if you could pay attention to that concern. The pet relief areas, that's a toughie. You're going to have a lot of people there, and it's very popular to have animals now, even in small units like this. So, and I don't have any idea how those are managed in a large unit like that. I guess there's a homeowner association, but it sounds like a messy job to me. So, something to consider, I suppose. And that's about all I had. Anne, did you come up with anything?
If you add the a roof on top, will that exceed our height limits? Oh, okay. And that's, I was wondering if an HOA would because for animal relief, whether you're going to allow pets even.
Yeah, that's a good question. So.
That's all.
Okay. Anything else from the council?
I have to defend my dogs. They're probably going to bite me as soon as I go home. I hadn't even thought of them, but it's a pet relief area now that they're going to lose.
The vacant lot, you mean?
Yeah, the vacant lot. I'm sorry, but man, if something could be done, can you put pet relief on the roof? I guess not.
Huh. Ooh. Well, got a drain. I guess you could. I don't know. Not my problem.
Yeah.
And I can't leave without mentioning that the bar and the little liquor store that used to be there. I have a friend who claims at least his grandparents used to own that and run it years and years and years ago. They used to get workers coming in off, I don't know what big project around here, 20, 30 years ago. Anyway. He's been a couple times visiting us from Orange County, and yeah, my grandmother and grandfather used to run that place. So he'll be sad to hear it's being torn down because evil people are developing stuff. But anyway.
It's not on the list of historical landmarks, is it? There was no mention by the staff that it's any historical in any way.
No, I don't think so.
So as a part of the formal application, they're actually, because it is a structure that is greater than 50 years, we are required to make an analysis. So that's forthcoming.
Okay, cool. And there's no trees, so we don't have to worry about oak trees down there.
Okay, so I guess if there is nothing else, we can close this item. Nothing else?
Did staff have all the input they...
Yeah, we
and the applicant, yeah.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, thank you for the input. As Ms. Martin has alluded to, we both are hoping to see more projects like this come to the commission at the initial stages and receive that input that helps to shape their plan and let them know, give them a feel what the commission is looking for. So again, the next steps are thank you for your comments, and then it's up then to the applicant to revise and refine their plan and submit it to city staff for review.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So let's move on to commissioners' comments. We can start with Commissioner Rodman, who I understand has an announcement to make.
I do. You're going to miss my announcement. I'm leaving the community. My house the escrow is closing on May the 12th. My wife and I are moving into a motorhome, and we're going to tour the state and see if we can find areas as good as Grover Beach. I'm going to miss this community. I'm going to miss all of you guys. I was really ignorant when I first joined this, 10 years ago or so, and I've learned a lot, and there's a lot more to learn, and man, if I could be as good as somebody like Raphael on this kind of stuff, I'd be an amazing person.
You'd have a job.
But I really appreciate the public's input. If there's any disappointment in what I've experienced on this commission is a lack of public coming to us and letting us know what their wishes are. And I think we've done all that we can do, and I don't know what else can be due to involve the public, but man, if you have an idea, please present it to the staff and let's get more community input. That's what this whole thing is all about, is maintaining and keeping the community.
I'm happy to provide community input.
Okay.
Whenever called upon.
Yeah, well, come when
all
you're not
you
called upon.
That's Thank you so much.
Okay. That's so, yeah, I guess this has been a welcoming, and I expressed my thanks for all your service you've done, and I guess I should express it in public again. You've done a great job. You ask the hard questions. You ask the questions that I might be embarrassed to ask.
Yeah, I have a very high threshold for embarrassment.
Yeah, so. There you go. So you've been a perfect foil for my residents to speak, yeah?
Right.
And I appreciate your service, and I hope you have a great time traveling around the country. It sounds like fun.
I do, too. I'm anxious and happy all at the same time.
So now that you've given your notice, so to speak,
yes.
I guess the city council will move to review some applications that we received, and I don't know if they're going to do interviews this time or just make a selection, but...
That's correct. So we'll be accepting applications for planning commissioners, and so there will be your seat, and then there is a second seat coming up at the end of May, and so Commissioner McLaughlin will either provide his application or we'll be interviewing some additional candidates for that position as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll go next. I'm not going to be in town for the June meeting, assuming there might be one.
That is tentatively penciled in on our calendar.
It is penciled in, okay.
At this point in time, we have a couple of projects that we have on our radar that we want to make sure that we save that date in the event that we do want to move forward with them, but it may end up being canceled as well as the July for the holiday.
Okay. So just to give you a heads up, I'll be out of town at a wedding. So, niece or something. Anyway.
That's what June is for, right?
I guess June weddings. Yes, it is. Just to let you know that. That's the only comment I have. Anne, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. So much for commissioners' comments, community development director's comments.
I just have a couple. Thank you. So the first, I wanted to let your commission know that our city council recently said goodbye to our mayor pro tem, Anna Miller. She, due to a change in residency, so similar, not mobile residency, but similar circumstance. The council did decide to fill the vacancy based on appointment. They have an appointment to hold a special election or do an appointment. They chose appointment, and we conducted outreach to the community, to all residents of Grover Beach to apply, emphasizing that of District 3. And we received 5 applications, and they appointed Zach Zimmerman. He is a resident of District 3, and you may be familiar with his name. He is both a business owner here in town, Empower Yoga, with his partner. He's a winemaker, and he is heavily involved in the community and involved in a lot of different civic engagements and events. So his name is around the community, and we're really excited to see him fill that position. And just additionally for your knowledge, council members continue to serve 4-year terms. Both District 3 and District 4 will be up for election in 2024. So any questions on his appointment? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Last update. I just wanted to make you aware. The city of Grover Beach hosted a San Luis Obispo Council of Governments and Housing and Community Development kind of meet and greet, where South County Community Development Directors, as well as our city manager, Matt Bronson, sat down with the HCD director, Gustavo Velasquez, to tour. The HCD director essentially was touring all of San Luis Obispo County and looking at how we're addressing housing And he was able to tour the Cabins for Change facility. He multiple times expressed his enthusiasm as well as how impressed he was with the collaboration to see that facility through. But ultimately, we're just excited to announce that he was very impressed with the amount of housing that the city is moving forward over these past couple of years. And so he was excited to see us addressing those local housing needs and what we would have in store in the future. And while I wasn't able to participate, Rafael was in attendance, provided some much needed feedback for us to also be able to coordinate, improve our coordination and communication with HCD. It can sometimes be difficult to get in touch with their staff, but it sounds like we had a really great just all-around roundtable, and that is it for my updates, unless you have any questions of me or anything you'd like me to look into for next time.
Yeah. I'm surprised that his last request, Commissioner Rodman's, that is, was not for an update on the hotels. But
I can
provide you a plethora of updates on hotels, if you would like.
Yes.
950 El Camino Real. I'll let Rafael take that one. But 1598 El Camino, they're still in their same position, working through a lot of their environmental constraints and permitting. Grover Beach Lodge, your commission approved a recommended approval of a two-year time extension this evening. But for 950 El Camino Real, we've got some exciting news to share with you.
Yeah, so as of Friday, we wrapped up a revision review for 950 El Camino Real, and we've deemed it approved and ready to be issued, pending school fee payments and a couple other civil engineering items that need to get done and wrapped up. But in speaking with the developer, they have their financing ready to go. And they're looking forward to break ground ASAP to get going on that. So we are very excited that this project that has been very long time in the making has actually met the finish line and is ready to get started.
Cool.
That's the one with a temporary lake in it.
Right.
I call it a basin.
It's a water retention basin.
Water retention system.
Right, yeah. Temporary. So formerly known as the Holiday Inn Express, mm-hmm. or Grover Beach Holiday Inn. I forget what other item, you know, it's been a while, but it is a national flag. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But they are ready, and we're excited to get this project going. Excellent. Alongside other construction projects that we have going on.
Yeah, that's good news.
And one other thing, this isn't necessarily your bailiwick, but the news is making a big deal about our homeless encampment a law that just took effect Monday, I guess. I'm sure it's too early for feedback on that, but I got Mr. Hale's attention.
Well, I think that any time you have an ordinance that that is approved, we want to take the time to implement it and see how sure. those regulations fare against the circumstances that exist on the ground. And so right now we're actively enforcing those regulations and ensuring that, you know, we are educating the public as well as the unhoused and the transients in the area so that they understand the rules. And if there are any amendments or any updates that we need to do to the ordinance, we will be returning back to the council with those recommended changes. But as of right now, it's an actively, you know, implement and enforce and wait and see how successful it is. But we feel pretty confident that it's going to help a lot of homeowners see some relief.
Okay, very good. Any other questions, no. comments?
I think not.
Okay, then, with no further business before the commission, I adjourn this meeting at 7:21.